Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Time to talk football with the professor, John Clayton. We do it every day here with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
By the way, another reminder, if you guys have questions for John, you can text those into 710-710. If we've got time, we'll get to some of those questions. Meanwhile, John, you there?
I'm right here, yes.
Okay. All right. Just wanted to make sure.
Can I start off with this one? I'm sorry, Bob.
You got one that caught your eye already?
Professor, Jim Moore is leaving the show early to go to a country western concert.
Oh, my God.
Your thoughts?
I want to throw up.
Hey, John, she's a rising star, Lindsay L. You wouldn't go see her?
No. She's country. I hate country.
And we get to meet her.
You get to meet her? Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I'll let you meet her, but it's like, but the problem is, are you staying for the concert and listening to the music? I mean, maybe meeting her is great and then leave. I thought that'd be a good
thought. Well, we might meet her after she sings. So
you're saying you'd be wearing earplugs, you think, John?
No, I wouldn't be in the building.
Oh. But how do you feel about country music, I guess, is what we're all curious about.
I hate it.
Okay.
Yeah, despicable.
What if he were leaving to go see Slayer?
Great, I'd be with him.
You'd be with him? You'd say take the day off?
Or James Brown?
Oh, well, I mean, it's hard to see James Brown right now. We have to kind of go to a different area, like heaven or something like that.
His energy level's different these
days.
Yeah,
a little bit. Yeah, because
that's not very nice.
Well, he's
Come
not
on.
With us anymore. It's like,
I know.
I miss him.
I saw James Brown at the Coliseum.
Did you?
Yeah. Yeah, I was
What'd
there.
What'd you think?
It was entertaining. It was good. Nate McMillan was
there. Was he in the round?
No.
Okay.
No, he was just at the Coliseum. It was good. Meanwhile, let's move on, shall we?
Sure.
John, of all the quarterbacks we're talking about, we haven't talked much about Big Ben Roethlisberger, who I know you're a fan of. He's rehabbing. What are the expectations for him? Is he expected to be back to business as usual? Do they think, based on his age and the injuries over the years, that this most recent injury is going to be one that will compromise him? What's happening?
No, they think
him?
He's going to be fine. In fact, Kevin Colbert had a press conference today. You know, he just re-signed as a general manager and talked about Ben. And right now, everything's on path for him to come back. And with that, they think that you know, they can be back to being a playoff team. You know, because you know what they did. Of course, you know, he got hurt in the Seattle game in Week 2. Actually, he probably got hurt in Week 1, and it carried over to Week 2. And so by halftime, his season was over, and they thought their season was over. But you know, Kevin said that you know, they think he feels better about this team coming off the 8-8 season without Ben, because they have Ben back, than he did the year before when they were 9-6-1. So I think right now expectations are pretty strong for this team.
All right, John. Oh, you know what? I was going to ask you this. You saw the whole, I don't know if you saw the Houston Astros today with their press conference.
It was
pretty pathetic.
Awful.
What do you think the NFL, because here's what I've said, I'm just going to make it an NFL question, but Rob Manfred just seems like he should have been there, gotten the, you know, the owners together, maybe the, you know, the managers, and just said, hey, look, man, we got to get away from this thing. Here's how we're going to do it. It just seemed like they were totally unprepared. I feel like Roger Goodell, as much as I complain about him trying to make the game safe, I feel like he would have done a much better job.
And you just said the word safe, so I didn't hear any screaming on that. But overall, no, I think it's a...
no, we're supposed to hear this, John. safe. Okay, anyway.
No, that's reserved for country music. No, but I have to think that they probably would put the clamps down and have a no-comment type of policy. And I know Dave Grosby has been preaching this really for, you know, a little over a week, that there should have been, you know, none of this as a press conference, you know, just like a gag order, so you keep it out of the news and you keep it out of the public, because, again, it's bad enough as it is. You know, you notice that even with Spygate and all the different type of gates that we've had with New England, you know, they've kept a pretty low profile as far as commenting and just wait for the results. And I think baseball had no plan as to how to control this, how to limit it, and that's now made it a very messy situation down in Houston, and what's going to be very messy for the rest of the league.
So what do you think when they get the beanballs thrown at them, what do you think the commissioner will do, John? Because I think he'll be pretty harsh with that if that happens.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, what will end up happening is it's probably going to hurt the opposing teams more so than Houston. Because, again, if you're going to be having beanballs and stuff like that, I mean, that's going to go against the pitchers for the other teams and the fights for the other teams. I mean, it's going to be a battle. Certainly Houston's going to be affected, but I think it could cause more damage for the other teams because there's more anger on the other teams. I mean, hey, if you're the Mariners and you had as bad of a record as they've had against the Astros over the last 3 to 4 years, don't you think you'd be a little bit angry? Don't you think he may want to take a couple pitches and throw it at some of these guys?
Yeah, but I think we all assume they didn't need to cheat to beat the M's.
No, that's true, to beat the M's, but how about the Dodgers? And
well, yeah, they've got reason to be upset, certainly. Yeah, the whole thing's ridiculous, the way it's been handled, the way the players have conducted, the owner, it was a complete moron today. It was awful. It was awful.
I agree 100%.
Speaking of which, what is going on in New Orleans? This story hasn't gotten a lot of attention, but the Saints and what their involvement with the Archdiocese concerning clergy's sex abuse scandals and this whole thing. What is going on with that?
That one, it's been hard to follow because I can't fully understand it. I mean, I guess they're trying to support what was going on, trying to support the church and all that stuff, and a lot of emails going back and forth. But I never really fully understood what the issue was, and so they've had this big long apology. I mean, the league's not going to do anything about it. Probably there's nothing for them to do. But no, this was very messy, and it's one of those things where you see it, and it's like I don't grasp it. I don't know where to really go with it.
Yeah, I'm just reading a quick paragraph out of it. It says the AP reported last month victims' lawyers. Sexual abuse victims who are obviously suing the Archdiocese allege that hundreds of Saints emails show the team executives did behind-the-scenes public relations damage control amid the Archdiocese of New Orleans clergy abuse crisis. So mm-hmm. They were the local clergy there, obviously under fire for terrible things, and the Saints were out there trying to help them with their damage control.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, it's kind of weird because it's like, okay, so you have the Saints is certainly one of the most popular things in that area trying to help a church. But, of course, they're helping, I guess, to cover it up and do support. So, the thing is, if you're supporting a church, and I know things were bad at that church and all that stuff, but don't you think that's not necessarily a bad thing?
Well, John, if they're helping, to make this look good and paint this up as something not that bad when you're talking about sexual abuse of children, yeah, it's a horrible thing. It's a horrible thing. I mean, I'm not sure why they'd even want to be associated with it.
Yeah, and apparently they were, and now they're taking the criticism for it. But, yeah, it's just a weird story. Sometimes you see some of these stories, and you say, I don't get it. And this is one of those stories I just didn't get.
Hey, John, I've not even asked about this guy just because I have assumed that the Minnesota Vikings are going to lock him up and not let him go. I believe he is going to be a free agent. Everson Griffin. Mm-hmm. Now, too old, you think? I'm looking over the last 6 years, he's averaged 9.5 sacks. He's just a fantastic run player. What do you think?
That was a guy that I know. Right toward the end of training camp, I thought Seattle would try to trade for because I thought that, and they didn't. But I think what ended up happening, he had such a good training camp and then also such a good season that they weren't going to trade him. And so now, I mean, he's got a void in his contract that, he could get out of it. But I still think that they want to have him. I mean, he had a Pro Bowl season. I know he's making 13 plus million bucks. And, the next contract he's going to have is going to be for much less. So I don't know if he's going to rework his contract and take a pay cut. But, after the horrible 2018 season where, I don't know how you want to phrase it, I mean, just had a mental breakdown of sorts, now he's bounced back and really done a great job and was a great player and was a great leader on that team.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that thing. What was that, 2 years ago? When,
2 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, it was something with his mental health. But, he was ferocious last year.
Oh, he really was. I mean, and the combination of him and Danielle Hunter is sensational. I mean, that's the one thing is that the strength of that team is the front seven on defense. Yeah. I mean, you can say that the receiving core is good, and they have Rudolph at tight end and Kirk Cousins at quarterback. But, boy, that front four is really good, and it's deep. But, again, it's getting a little bit older now.
Mm. John, we have the Greg Olsen decision coming up tomorrow. Do you think if Seattle loses out, it'll be to the broadcasting booth or Buffalo?
I think it would be to maybe Buffalo because you get the feeling, it's like, okay, so he's doing games now, right? He's probably doing a game this weekend, and he wants to play. It's like, okay, I'll make a decision by Friday, and I think that the desire is there to play. Seems like the ability is still there to play, and that's why I think they have a decent chance of getting this thing done.
If he chose to go to Washington, I get that his former head coach is there, but
yeah. I can't see Washington.
Wouldn't that tell you he's not that concerned with winning?
Yes, it would. Yeah, because again, it's like if you're going to do this, and listen, I don't know if you watched the broadcast or seen him broadcast. He's really good.
Yeah, he does really good. The XFL as well. He does a good job.
I mean, he's really sensational at doing this, and so you know he's going to have a good career at that. But if you can squeeze out another year, it's kind of like, I know the guy that tipped this off certainly was Troy Aikman, because he tipped off. He says, you know, you always want to get that one extra year. And I know Dan Marino did it, and John Elway did it, and all these different quarterbacks have done it. But you kind of get the idea. Here's Greg Olsen. He wants to squeeze out one more year, and he's still got the ability to do it. I hope he does it, and I hope he gets the chance to sign on with Seattle.
Okay, John, we were just talking about Dave Brown. We're talking about locker room guys, yeah. And I just remember him getting traded to Green Bay. I guess that was in 1987. It was my rookie year, actually. And I just remember it was a big void. Everybody loved him in Seattle. He'd been there for, 10, 11, 12 years. Dave Brown, is he a Hall of Famer?
Probably not. I mean, he's
62 interceptions, John.
Yeah. No,
62!
He's really good. Well, and the thing is, I'm a little bit sensitive on that one because I covered him in two different cities.
Yeah, you
I was
started
there.
Out in Pittsburgh.
I was there when he was drafted in the first round in Pittsburgh. Rhonda Brown is our neighbor across the street, and she's just sensational. And so, but you're right. But it was funny because you look at the fact that he had those 62 interceptions, and it was at a time that you didn't think there was going to be a lot of interceptions because this was the time that passing wasn't totally in vogue. It was a running defensive league. But I remember going to the Blue Ribbon Committee and then talking about Donnie Shell, who was also in that secondary as a safety, and he was undrafted in 1974 on what now turns out to be five Hall of Famers from that class for the Steelers. And he ended up as a safety having 51 interceptions. So it's kind of amazing to think that the talent that Pittsburgh had, because Dave Brown was left to go to the expansion draft because they just had so many good cornerbacks.
Yeah. Well, I'm just looking. He had five touchdowns in his career, 12 fumble recoveries. This guy was good for almost 70 takeaways in his career. So
same thing for Donnie Shell. Donnie Shell was involved in 19 fumble recoveries. It was 51 interceptions and 19 fumble recoveries.
John, a lot of speculation about the Chargers with Phillip Rivers leaving town, that maybe another quarterback will come in there, Jameis Winston or whoever might be the case. But Anthony Lynn, the coach there, he gave a vote of confidence to Tyrod Taylor. What do you think, John?
Well, and of course, he just got the one-year extension, so he's now signed Anthony Lynn through 2021. I think what you get the idea, they let Phillip Rivers go. They plan to draft a quarterback, and they're going to have Tyrod Taylor as the running quarterback who's just going to try to get them through this season. So you get the feeling that they might want to trade up to get Tua. That's a possibility. But they're sitting there at the sixth pick in the draft, and I think that they could be content to take Justin Herbert. So I think what you're looking at, and that's why initially most people had them going into their new stadium with the idea that, hey, if Tom Brady's there, they're going to go for Tom Brady. Now, for about 2 weeks, you haven't been picking up that sentiment, and I think what it comes down to, they realize they can draft the quarterback of the future and have Tyrod Taylor running around trying to make plays, because I think you look at the team, and they're not a Super Bowl team, and I think they accept that, but they want to get the young quarterback, and I think Herbert's going to be the one.
Well, I'm torn on Herbert a little bit, John. What kind of career do you think he's going to have?
I think he's going to be pretty good. I mean, it's like you'd love to be able to say he's going to be an elite quarterback, but he's probably not going to be that. But when I was watching him in the Senior Bowl and the Senior Bowl practices, and again, this was on TV, I wasn't there, but it's like when I was watching him, he just kind of reminds me of Kirk Cousins. And that's not a bad thing, because Kirk is a guy that, he can get you to the playoffs. He may struggle to win a playoff game, but he's good enough to be able to do that. So he kind of reminds me on a positive side of maybe being a Kirk Cousins type of quarterback. Now, I know I say that, and Kirk was drafted in the fourth round, but then Russell Wilson that year was drafted in the third round, and both have had pretty good careers.
John, we've talked about Dak Prescott and Cowboys signing him, what's that number going to be, all that good stuff. One guy we haven't talked about is Amari Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think they're committed to bringing him back? Do you think he ends up elsewhere?
I think so, but I think they also realize it's going to be tough to get him to a contract. Now, a couple things have to play out, and this may work to the benefit of the Cowboys. If they can't get a collective bargaining agreement done here before March, then they have to go with the last year rules in the CBA, and that gives you the ability to do a franchise tag and also use a transition tag. And so what they can do is use the transition tag on him, Amari Cooper. He won't be happy about it. And the franchise tag on Dak Prescott. But, of course, then they have to worry that, okay, is somebody going to try to sign him? And no, I know it's not going to be with a poison pill or anything like that that we saw in the Steve Hutchinson departure. But, you know, I think that they can maybe find a way to make that work.
Hey, John, I was listening to Tom and Stacy and Jake yesterday or 2 days ago talking about Mike Holmgren and the Hall of Fame, been kind of comparing him to Cowher. And so Mike's been three times, won one, right? Lost two, got jobbed in Super Bowl 40, had to play the guys with the striped shirts. But, you know, what about him? How long till Mike? Because, you know, he comes here as the GM, he turns everything around, and then he's just such an offensive, I hate saying genius, because I don't think there are any geniuses, but man, he was good as far as, you know, running an offense. What do you think?
The sentiment in the room for the Blue Ribbon Committee almost had him going in this year. It just turned out to be Cowher. We all kind of knew that Jimmy Johnson was going to get the most of the votes, and which was fine. But I think what it comes down to now, for Mike Holmgren to make it in, you know, Tom Flores needs to make it in, Don Coryell needs to make it in, the board at the Hall of Fame needs to give us the ability to have a coaching category. If there's no coaching category, then it's not going to happen. I mean, like you go for at least another long period of time, but it's time right now. And I know that the Hall of Fame is really in favor of doing that, particularly with the good response that they had, you know, going on the TV with Cowher, going on TV with Jimmy Johnson. And I think they want to have that. And if that's the case, I think it, you know, the push would be to get Mike Holmgren in if there's a coaching category next year.
You bring up Tom Flores, and I just saw this story online that said Flores told ESPN he was, quote, kind of disgusted by the manner in which he was snubbed. He said that David Baker told him, quote, he was almost a shoe-in to make the Hall of Fame when the special 20-man class was announced, and that no one ever called him to tell him he didn't make it. He just learned when Cowher and Johnson were announced as the two new Hall of Fame coaches on TV. He says, it happened. What can I do about it? I don't have a choice. My fans are still my fans, and they're still going to make a lot of noise. A lot of people are really pissed off about this whole thing. A lot of people are pissed off for other guys that didn't make it either. I can't say I'm exclusive in that respect.
Yeah, I mean, it's the matter. We need to get this done so that we can get the you know, coaches category, because, you know, it's, and I'm being a member of the contributing committee, it was a matter, you play catch up, right?
And I think he was yelling at you in particular, John.
Well, I did his presentation. I mean, I was the one who presented.
I think you should have done better. How come he's not in?
I presented Cowher, Coryell, and Flores. And according to David Baker, I did well for all three. I did a good job for all three.
How does that work, by the way? Do you have a speech? You stand up in front of the room, everybody's sitting, looking
He's
at
stumping.
You. All eyes are on you, and you make a speech on, all right, right now I'm going to talk about Bill Cowher. Now I'm going to talk about Tom Flores.
Yeah, we got 3 minutes, and we got 5 minutes. And so you just make a preparation and all that, and you know, I made the preparation. And the biggest thing I had to present is, like, you got to take Seattle out of the equation here, because Tom Flores should be judged for what he did for the Oakland Raiders. He took them to two Super Bowls. He won two Super Bowls. He did it on a team that it wasn't the easiest thing to be a coach of the Raiders, because, I mean, you had Al Davis looking down at you all the time, and, I mean, he makes it tough on the coach. You had so many characters on that team, but Tom was so good at being able to make it all work. He had a good offensive mind. He had a good presence. The players all respected him, and they all played well in the big games. And so, you know, that was part of the things that I said. And then what I also did is that I went with his record against really good coaches. I mean, 2-1 against Chuck Knoll, 2-1 against a lot of Jimmy Johnson. I mean, he had such a good record against some of the best coaches in football, and he deserved to get in. But again, we had a different room this time, because, you know, we had 13 of the 48 Hall of Fame voters, and then we had, you know, 12 other NFL coaches, executives, people from the league, and all that. So unfortunately, it slipped for Tom. But if we can get the coaches category, I think he's going to make it in within the next 2 or 3 years.
You know why you did a good job, John? Because you're afraid David Baker was going to come over and strangle you and pick you up by your head.
What a large human being
that
he is.
That guy is huge.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the one thing he said, and I know that Sal Palantonio was sitting right next to me and was going to make a presentation, and one of the things that came up is that, as David said, he's like, now we're getting close to our lunch period right now, and I don't like to be held back from lunch, and I'm a very big guy. And so it's like, you know, Sal, do you want to go ahead and do the presentation? And Sal says, oh, no. Let's wait, and we'll do it right after lunch.
Yeah, we don't want to keep David Baker. I mean, everybody, I think, has seen this guy, and I didn't know who he was for a long time.
Used to be with the Arena League, right, John?
Yeah.
Yeah, every time I see
and remember,
him.
His son was a former first-round pick of the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, we had him on
who
set.
Who was it?
Sam Atkins. I mean, Sam Baker.
Oh, yeah, okay. He sat with us on set at the Super Bowl years ago, and we had those director chairs. You know,
yeah.
Those kind of,
oh, he couldn't sit in that. Could
he came over and started to sit down, and he stood up. He goes, I better not.
Yeah. Oh, he's just a huge guy.
He's,
I mean, it's
massive.
He's just he's got a huge nugget, man. But every time I see him on the sidelines, he's got the biggest smile on his face, mm-hmm. and he always comes up to you and looks at you like, you know, he knows you, and just seems like to be a very,
a great guy.
Very nice gentleman.
And I'm so appreciative of him because, I mean, he has been able to listen to some of the things. Like, for example, I guess, you know, people would say they might be mad at me for Tom Flores getting in. It's like, no, wait a second. I'm the one who's been pushing the most for the coaching category. I've been thinking of the coaches for so long that, you know, again, Will McDonough was the one who educated me on this, and I always listened to Will because he taught me everything in the room. And so it's like we're trying to get the coaches away from the modern-day players and get their own category. And I think David Baker first, he was able to get the contributors. That worked great. And then we're now working on getting the coaches, and I think that's fantastic. So I'm appreciative that David Baker listens to me and, you know, is following through on some of this stuff.
John, NFL.com rated all the 2019 draft classes postseason, how they did this season. The 49ers were ranked number one. He gave them an A. The Seahawks, a C+, ranked 24th, and the Jets, a D and 32nd. Is that in line with your way of thinking?
Yeah, pretty much. Again, it's like, you know, you can, you know, again, judging it after 1 year can be tough because, you know, a lot of times the rookies don't do well in that first year. And of course, you saw this year because of the things that were going on with this defense, they didn't want to put too many rookies out there. So when you look at the play time and everything else, you know, a C+, I think, is a respectable grade with the limited amount of time that they had it. But this is a good rookie class. I mean, you can see that they did well on special teams, a lot of the guys, but that's where they played the most. But I think that this class will get a better grade as it gets into year two and year three.
John, good stuff. We'll talk tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, there you go. There's the professor, John Clayton, on with us every day. A reminder, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by Dubin Law Group. Coming up, what should the Seahawks wide receiver core look like next year? Now, is Tyler Lockett still the number one? Do they need to add a free agent? We'll get into all of that coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.